Hi, my name's Russell Norman, and welcome to Blue Marble Storytellers, bringing you great stories from around the globe. On this episode, we bring you a horror crime story written and read by Elle Madison called Just Ask for Mercy. This was the winning entry of the Readsy Prompts Short Story Writing Competition number 147. Elle Madison lives in London and one day woke up to find all her life's energies were being channeled into her work as a health professional and raising her two beautiful but ever starving teenage sons. So she decided to rekindle some of the amazing creativity still glimmering in a dusty corner of her mind. And we are so glad that she did. We are scheduled to talk to Elle Madison on an upcoming episode of Read Lots, Write Lots. So look out for that. Please enjoy her great story.
Something is eating the hostas. It's a tricky section of the garden, shaded and north-facing, but the foliage thrives under my watchful eye. I ensure it grows lush and verdant, and only I can coax it from sulking in this hot, dry weather. The blue-green tones of Siboldiana flourish beside the golden variegated undulates leaves. I'm outraged by the pockmarked damage I discovered and search for the culprit amongst the ovate leaves. There, a snail clings to the underside of a leaf sucked close in a non-consensual and greedy kiss. I prise it off and the shell implodes in my pincer grip, crushed mush oozing between my fingertips. I discard the muck onto the soil with disdain, satisfied that feeder has now become food. A gardener must be brutal, constantly battling soft-bodied grubs, mandible-fanged pests, plagues of aphids, and creeping insidious blight, all in order to protect the precious shoots and trembling new leaves. She must also have a hard, calculating heart to destroy what was previously nurtured, cutting back and curbing life when the time comes, sacrificing what was once so carefully created. I, the gardener, am like God. Through me nature flows, giving vigour to the strong and enabling the weak and damaged to pass. Inside the house, the landline telephone clamours, taking 7 rings for Mrs. Nolan to stir from her armchair doze and mobilise her arthritic joints to answer it. Crouched here, beneath the open kitchen window, I am perfectly placed to eavesdrop on what she says. Hello, this is Miriam. Oh, I'm as well as can be expected. And you? Yes, a very hot spell. The garden's very thirsty. Oh, really? You're too kind. Honestly, it's too much. I can't quite take it all in. Trevor would have been so pleased, so very, very pleased. Thank you ever so much. It's all such a surprise. I certainly will, and you too. Cheerio. The telephone pings as it's replaced in its cradle, and I sense Mrs. Nolan shuffling along to the back door to find me. I muse over the emotional wobble I overheard in her voice. She's been prone to tears since Mr. Nolan's unfortunate accident, and numerous well-meaning villagers have phoned to offer comfort. But this call was a curious one, and I'm keen to be enlightened. Mercy, are you there? Right over here, Mrs. Nolan. I sound as sweet as maple syrup. Mrs. Nolan emerges from the side of the house, blinking in the bright sunshine, taking a moment to locate me by the shadowy border. I've had the most remarkable news, Mercy. The village committee have nominated me for the Best Blooming Garden Award. How kind of them. I'm sure it's Trevor's dahlias that persuaded the judges. He took such meticulous care of them. Trevor deserved the nomination, not me. He'd have been so proud. But it's too late. Both Mrs. Nolan and I glance involuntarily to the place on the lawn where Mr. Nolan was found. I'm pleasantly surprised to notice how prolifically the daisies are growing. They're clearly thriving from the minerals in Mr. Nolan's blood. Here we go. Mrs. Nolan's eyes are welling up and her chin is wobbling. I stand, knit my eyebrows together with a show of concern and gently usher her back indoors to put the kettle on. That's when I know there's no hope left for Mrs. Nolan. A well-meaning nomination, probably from sympathy votes, has exacerbated her misery and reduced her to convulsive weeping, proving any pleasure in life is now well beyond her grasp. What particularly irks me is that the dahlias were mostly attended to by myself, at least ever since Mr. Nolan's stroke last year, and I've exclusively cared for them since his recent demise. The dahlias, the roses, those blousy, vulgar petunias that Mrs. Nolan chose and I obediently bedded in, the nomination is all thanks to me. The world has no place for the old and feeble. In this very garden, right under our noses, nature uses all manner of macabre means to ensure order is kept. Pincers, stingers, poisons, parasites that eat their hosts slowly from within. Although violent, these acts are essentially a great kindness. A kindness Mrs. Nolan now deserves. I ponder my options. While some impulsivity was involved with Mr. Nolan, this time I'll carefully consider my plan. Not to say last time wasn't efficient and effective. I'd taken great care that afternoon to prune the privet hedge to perfection. I was clearing away the cuttings, gloved as the sap can sting, whilst Mr. Nolan limped up and down, pedantically questioning some cross-branch irregularities he perceived in the shrubs. I pitied him, unable as he was to appreciate my work and no longer able to manage the shears himself with one useless arm. It was the least I could do to relieve him of his agitation once and for all. Stepping close, I plunged the points of the shears into his fleshy cotton-shirted paunch, which gave little more resistance than a fish belly, and slid the blades upwards under his ribs. It was remarkably easy. This single moment of pain was all it took to free him from his frustrated, failing body. A poppy crimson stain blossomed under his spread fingers as he clutched his gut in a futile attempt to hold back the seeping blood. Before my eyes, his pallid face became slack-jawed with disbelief. He gurgled and spluttered, eyes bulging pleadingly, but there was nothing left to be said. As he staggered, I gently grasped him by his shoulders and guided him down to the ground face first, so the blade tips emerged through his back like fresh new shoots. It looked every bit the tragic accident. The clumsy fall of a foolish man carrying tools he couldn't handle when he should have left the work for the gardener. I removed the remaining cuttings under the pretense I'd left much earlier and left him for Mrs. Nolan to find after she returned from the parish cake sale. Perhaps a similarly violent end for Mrs. Nolan would be fitting. I'm briefly excited by the thought of her pale wrists cut to scarlet ribbons by secateurs, driven to suicide by grief, of course. I suspect the bleeding out could take some time, and given the neighbours' windows will be wide open in the summer heat, enabling them to hear her screams, maybe this is an unwise option. A fall on the patio? I think of Mrs. Nolan's head as the snail shell crushed between my fingers, and wonder if one blow would be enough. Multiple blows would be inconsistent with a fall, raising suspicions that could compromise the innocent image I'm associated with throughout the village. I'm reluctant to take such risk. My eyes narrow thoughtfully as I scan the tapestry of summer-petaled foliage in the garden borders. Mrs. Nolan's made a Victoria sponge. She tells me it's to celebrate the Best Blooming Garden nomination, but I can see her tired old heart's not in it. Nevertheless, we're both playing along with her pointless charade while it lasts. "Do have a slice before you go," she urges me. "I'll wrap up an extra piece for you to take home." We're sat at her little kitchen table. I've taken Mr. Nolan's chair as I'm curious to see her reaction, but she doesn't comment. She's adored my company since he's been gone, evidence of her lonely, pitiful existence. My heart swells to think that soon I'll have released her from her misery. "Won't you have any tea, Mercy?" She looks quizzically over the top of her cup at my untouched one. "I'm enjoying the delicious cake, Mrs. Nolan." I'm certainly glowing with anticipation, not at the sickly slice on my plate, but to see beads of sweat break out on her forehead. Mrs. Nolan raises a hand to her heart, probably feeling some palpitations. "Mercy, you've been a rock over these last few weeks. I don't know how I would have coped without you," she tells me earnestly. A curious sensation passes through me. A brief flicker of doubt, possibly even guilt. After all, it's not too late, is it? I push the inconvenient emotions away, remembering my role as gardener requires ruthless management of the weak and sickly, and I wait. It's all happening fast now. Panic creeps into Mrs. Nolan's face as her heart begins to gallop like wild horses. She gasps, reaches out a hand towards me, but knocks my plate of cake onto the floor. Both smash into pieces on the tiles. Digitalis purpurea, a cottage garden favourite commonly known as the foxglove, is an excellent pollinator, adding heightened structure to summer borders. It's also highly toxic. The foxgloves I propagated have been glorious this year, in my opinion, outshining the dahlias by far. From the unripe green seeds, I've ground a paste and steeped it in the tea that Mrs. Nolan's poured from the pot. Her cup stands empty on the table, white and fluted like the trumpet of a foxglove flower. I watch closely, and I'm certain Mrs. Nolan experiences minimal pain as her racing heart outruns itself, my face disappearing from her view as her vision blurs and darkens. At her age, no one will suspect a thing. The village shop door tinkles as I enter, and I wait patiently while Janet serves a child buying sweets from one of the large jars on the shelf. I smile indulgently at the youngster, who glances uneasily at me and takes a wary, wide sidestep around me as he leaves. So strange that children often sense their vulnerability better than their adult counterparts. Mercy, how are you bearing up? Janet is the picture of kind concern. Such a blow to hear about Miriam. I heard you were there when she took poorly. It was terrible, I murmur, eyes downcast. She'd never truly recovered from finding Mr. Nolan in such a state. It was the shock, wasn't it? And a broken heart. Maybe it's all for the best. Janet shudders before her bright demeanour returns. What can I help you with? Could I pop a note in the window, please, to let people know I'm available for work? With Janet's permission, I take out from my bag the card I've carefully written my number on and slide it into one of the plastic sleeves hanging in the shop window. It's placed alongside local business cards and adverts for piano tuition and babysitting. In my neat, orderly cursive, I've written my number and a friendly message. I'm confident there will be a good response, especially as the Best Blooming Garden Award is still up for grabs. Does your garden need some love and care? Call now for experienced help. Just ask for Mercy.
We trust you enjoyed this story and really appreciate you listening to this podcast and supporting the great writers featured. To further support the writers, we'd also like to encourage you to share the links to this podcast far and wide. If you are a writer and you'd like to showcase your work or talk to us about your writing on Read Lots, Write Lots, we'd love to hear from you. Please get in touch with us by sending an email to russell@bmpublish.com. I'd also like to mention that we have a Discord channel to provide a place for writers to meet, chat, laugh, cry, and generally have fun in a supportive environment in which to share your love of writing. If you'd like to join us in our chat, you can find the details on our websites, readlotswritelots.com and bluemarblestorytellers.com. Before I go, I'd just like to mention we have recently uploaded our entire back catalogue of stories to the Blue Marble Storytellers YouTube channel, so you can find the full list of great stories there, as well as on the podcast channels. Well, that's it for this episode. So on behalf of Deirdre and myself, until next time, thanks for listening and bye for now.